We're going to be in the book of Ruth, and if you have your Bible, you want to open it to Ruth chapter 1. And if you don't have a Bible, share with someone, or you might be a little bored, because we're going to be looking through the book of Ruth. Obviously, the book of Ruth is something that's on my mind at this time, because we're going through a play, and so I thought that would be appropriate, since I've been thinking about that, and we would just go ahead and go through the book of Ruth. I'm going to go through an overview of the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is a wonderful love story. It's a story of a man's love for a woman that is a beautiful picture of Christ's love for the church. And there's many, many different analogies and things you can draw out of the book of Ruth, but it is basically the story of God's love for us. But there are many pictures and applications, and tonight I want to just give an overview of the book. We're going to go through the entire book, and I want to encourage you to read the book of Ruth several times yourself, slowly, even tonight. I don't know, until 4 in the morning, but read it through yourself and look for that picture. Draw out those nuances about the book of Ruth, where we can see what does Ruth represent? What does Boaz represent? Who is Naomi? And how does that apply to your life? There's only 4 chapters, so it makes it easy to stay focused. Those are the good books for me, just easy to stay focused. I like to read the ones you can start at the beginning, read the whole thing, and you get the whole picture. Those are easy for me. And so I want to encourage you to do that, to read it through yourself. The setting is during the time of the judges. Ties into a little bit of Miles' Sunday school lessons where he's at. It's the time of the judges when Israel is in this cycle of following God and being blessed and then turning from God and being judged or being punished. It's exactly the same cycle that you have in your life right now. And nothing has really changed. We follow God, we're blessed. You know, we turn from God and God chastens us. God sets expectations. Then our will comes in, we do or don't, and sowing and reaping applies. I mean, that is the story of God's relationship to his people. And so that's the situation in the book of Ruth. Moses led the people out of Egypt to the promised land. Moses was not allowed to enter the promised land. He could see it, but he couldn't go in himself personally. Joshua then takes over the leadership after Moses and leads the people into the land that God had promised to Abraham. Joshua and the people were instructed very strongly. Even Moses instructed the people very strongly that they are to believe God, obey God to the letter, and especially with Joshua's leadership, to not be afraid. Because they were going to have to do some very difficult things that physically would have been difficult, to conquer some 31 kingdoms and drive the inhabitants out of the land. You couldn't be afraid, you know, and do that. God wanted them to trust in him, that he would go before them, and that he would bring victory and win these battles for them. So they were instructed to be that way, and Joshua did conquer some 31 kingdoms in the process of claiming the land and driving out the inhabitants. Time of great victory for God's people, time of great destruction for the inhabitants of the land. If you read through some of it's just incredibly brutal destruction. And Miles tied in why that is. Those people were wicked in their own right. And God had this land was promised. And he used the Israelites at that time to bring that judgment and at the same time fulfill his promise. It's a pretty amazing thing how that all works out. All the people in the surrounding areas knew of the God of Israel. Didn't take long for the word to get spread around that God was fighting for his people. Some of them even banded together to try to withstand, and it was of no use. Nothing they did could stop, of course, God bringing the victory. And so Joshua was very, very successful in doing what he was instructed to do. After Joshua had the land, he divided it by the tribes. So each tribe divided the land up as the Lord had commanded previously that he had to do. And well, over time, the people did what people do. They did what sinners do. They begin to turn from God, turn their back on God. And lo and behold, judgment comes, and the book of Ruth really starts at a time of one of these judgment periods. There's a famine in the land when we start the book of Ruth, and Bethlehem, as a matter of fact, Bethlehem means house of bread. So it's ironic, there's a famine in Bethlehem, in the house of bread. But nonetheless, that's how it begins. Naomi, Elimelech, and their two sons leave Bethlehem and head to Moab, where they think that they can escape the judgment of the famine. And this is where we begin tonight. So go ahead and be in Ruth 1. Now it came to pass, in the days when the judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the name of the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came to the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Okay, stop right there. This section is really about testing or sorrow, and I think an important theme right now is that you cannot run from your problems. You cannot run from your problems. Someone wrote, "The efforts which we make to escape our destiny only lead us into it." The efforts which we make to escape our destiny only lead us into it. That's clear in this section of the scripture in Elimelech's life. He is trying to escape the famine in Bethlehem. He's trying to escape starving to death. And exactly what he tried to stop from happening, he gets to Moab and he dies. He didn't escape the situation. But he thought he was doing the right thing, no doubt. He most likely, my view is, he left the will of God. He left the promised land that was given, went to Moab to try to get provision in a heathen nation. And that wasn't a good place to be, apparently, because he died. One thing about Bethlehem, he was in rebuke. They were in judgment in Bethlehem, but they were alive in Bethlehem. You know, he goes to Moab, the heathen Nathan, to get provision, and he dies. Verse 4. So, she was left, and her two sons, and they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. Exactly what God did not want to happen is what happened. They did exactly what God did not want them to do by going into a heathen land. The sons took wives of the Moabites. Now, I suppose they ended up staying there much longer than they anticipated. They were there for 10 years. I can imagine that Elimelech said, "We're going to go sojourn in Moab, then let this thing pass over in a couple years." My wife could smile. "A couple years, we'll be back to the promised land. I was going to come to Chicago for 2 years and go back to the promised land. And I've been here 10 years, but I'm not dead, so that's good." But digressed. So I can imagine he would say, "Look, honey, it's just going to be, we just got to get, we can do something over there, and we're going to let this pass over." Well, he dies, and 10 years later, Naomi is still there. So I can relate to that situation. And, of course, her sons married Moabites, which is not a good thing for a child of God to be doing, is marrying Moabites. Verse 5, "And Mahlon and Chilion died also." Well, isn't that grand? "Both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited his people, giving them bread back in Bethlehem." It's ironic, she didn't get to see God bring the blessing and to stop the famine. She had to hear about it because she was in Moab. But nonetheless, she heard about it. "Wherefore she went forth," verse 7, "out of the place where she was, and her two daughter-in-laws with her, and they went on their way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, 'Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband.' Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they wept. And they said to her, 'Surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have an husband also even tonight, and should also bear sons, would you wait for them until they were grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieves me much for your sakes, that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and left, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. Naomi's sons die also. Now all three women are alone. Naomi actually tells Ruth to serve false gods here. Did you catch that? She says, your sister, she went back to her family to serve her false gods. Go back and do likewise, basically. Naomi's actually telling her to go serve false gods. You think of how far Naomi has gotten. I find it amazing. She's gotten so bitter, and she's gotten so confused by being outside of the will of God, that she really has lost all her godly perspective. I mean, Naomi I picture her as a godly woman before. They left the will of God, and she is now in serious trouble. Spiritually, she's in trouble. She's blaming God for what's happened to her, when in fact, you shouldn't blame God. She left the promised land. God's actually redeeming her back. She doesn't know it. She's kind of out there in this situation, and she's blaming God for her problems. And she even tells her daughter-in-laws, go serve false gods. Verse 16. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught be death part thee and me, if anything but death part us. When she saw that she was steadfast-minded to go with her, and she left off speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara. Mara means bitter. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Ruth makes, in this passage, what really is one of the most beautiful statements of faith in the whole Bible, in verses 16 and 17. When she says to her mother-in-law, whither thou goest, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where you die, I will die. I mean, these are commitment words from Ruth. I mean, she has heard about this God of Israel, and she's heard the stories, no doubt, from Naomi, from Mahlon and Chilion, who were children of Israel. She's certainly heard about how God provides for people, and she is fully convinced she wants to serve that God. At this point, she's showing some faith, big time, that Naomi is not showing. She's heard of Naomi's God and believes in whom she has not seen. Naomi's faith is in real trouble, but Ruth has a beautiful childlike faith right here. You see her childlike faith. She just heard about what God has done in the past, and she's believing in this God. She's not seen it, per se, in her own life. Her husband just died, but yet she's going to see it. She's going to see God's provision for her personally. Chapter 2 is really the chastising of Naomi. It is really the rebuking of Naomi through Ruth in chapter 2. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn. When you see that in Ruth, it's grain, it's barley, it's wheat. It's not corn like North American corn. It's barley and wheat that they're doing. It's corn is like a generic for a grain, okay? in much of the Old Testament. So we think, you know, ears of corn like we eat, you know, we get from Valley or something, and it's not that kind of corn. So let me go now into the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said to her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap, or she just happened to, her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was the kindred of Elimelech. And Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you, which is a standard greeting. And they answered, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitess damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued, even from the morning till now, that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz to Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field. Neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men they should not touch you? And when you are thirsty, go unto the vessels and drink that which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground, and she said, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou should take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said to her, it hath fully been showed me all thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and mother and the land of thy nativity, and come unto a people that you did not know. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, and for thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens. And Boaz said to her, at mealtime, come hither, and eat of the bread, and dip the morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn. He actually gave it to her. He provided it for her. And she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. And then Boaz... And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. God really shows himself great. That's a long passage. God really shows himself great in this passage here. Naomi is still having a bit of a pity party, and Ruth is simply living her childlike faith. Many people, including myself, believe that Ruth is a good picture of the Proverbs 31 woman here. And you can see many things in this passage about her that can show that out. She shows some of the character here. Verse 2, look what happens in verse 2. Ruth, she says, she asks if she can go get to work. She says, Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go now to the field and glean ears of corn. Ruth has heard about gleaning. You know, gleaning is how God provided for the outcast, the widow, the poor, and the needy. They would either not harvest all the way to the edges, and so the gleaners could come around the edges and get from the edges, or they could follow behind the reapers and just pick up the scraps that are left. And that was the way God would take care of the widows, the outcasts, the people from other countries, the people who were in need. She heard about that. She's asking, can I get to work? She wants to go to work. She is committed to care for Naomi, and she's just getting right into the work there. So you can see that. She's committed to take care of Naomi, and she's going to do it. Verse 7, Ruth is very bold. In verse 7, she says, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. She asked to glean among the sheaves. So she's either very bold or a little bit ignorant of the rules of the gleaning. I think she was probably a little bit ignorant of the rules about the gleaning, okay? But nonetheless, she's just out there trusting God to make it happen. Normally, gleaners, like I said, we're going to keep to the edges. To ask to glean among the sheaves meant I want to glean right up next to the people doing the reaping. I want to be right in there in the middle of it. And that's a little unusual. Most likely she didn't really fully understand the rules of the road, but she was by faith, trusting God, she's just going to go out and do what she thought she was supposed to be doing. Also, she's a very hard worker in verse 7. He says, and she continued, even from morning until now, she tarried a little in the house, very little. She started in the beginning of the day and she's just still working. She's out there working hard. She has a great work ethic. That's very impressive, and I think that's got Boaz's attention. Verse 8 through 16, Boaz really is hooked. I think he's hooked. He hears about her. He already has heard about who she was and what she has been doing for her mother-in-law, how she left her own family. And Boaz goes to her and then really starts to take care of her. He's so impressed with her. I believe her faith, her commitment, her character dealing with her mother-in-law, that he pulls out really all of the stops, and he shows her great kindness in return for what she's done and begins the process of meeting all of her needs. God has providentially worked the details to ensure that Ruth's faith would be blessed. And at the same time, he's going to restore Naomi's faith through the actions and faith of Ruth. And then verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until even, end of that day, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. That's maybe 1 week's of food for her and Naomi. In one day, she was able to glean a whole week's worth of food, probably because he's saying, leave some handfuls for her on purpose. And she took it up and went to the city to her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave it to her that she had received after she was sufficed. And her mother-in-law saw it, said unto her, where, she was surprised, where hast thou gleaned today, and where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. And Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, says, blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said to her, the man is a near kin unto us, and one of our next kinsmen. And Ruth the Moabite also said, she said, he said to me, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until the end of the harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, and that they meet you not in another field. So keep fast by his by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Naomi realizes here now that God is working. She sees the unusually large quantity of barley that Ruth has gleaned, and she really is amazed. She finds it that Ruth just happened to land on one of Boaz's fields, and then Boaz just happened to be coming from Bethlehem out to the field. Of course, none of that just happened, they end up meeting, and so this is a true work of God here. She's really being rebuked by God, I think, here, because she's been having a pity party. Ruth's been just faithfully serving God. And so God is rebuking her and showing her that that he really will care for and does love his people. Verse 20, she begins to make the confession. She's saying, blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness. She's confessing, she's blessing Boaz, but is starting to acknowledge that God does provide. Her whole attitude is really changing. And Ruth is also very encouraged as well, because she sees now, for the first time, that this God she heard about, this God that she believes in, is actually now providing for her personally. What she heard about from these Israelites is now actually applying to her. God just provided for her, and so she must be being encouraged as well. Chapter 3, the blessing, redemption. Naomi, her mother-in-law, says, daughter, I shall not rest for thee until it's good with thee. She begins to try to help Ruth take advantage of a custom of a redeemer. She says, is not Boaz our kindred with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee and put thy raiment upon thee and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he lies, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay down, and he will tell you what to do. And Ruth said to her, all that you say I will do. And she went down to the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went and lied down at the end of his heap of corn. They would sleep there when they were doing this. They would they're threshing and they're getting their harvest amount, and then they would sleep there to protect it. So there was a lot of people around there, and they would just sleep right there with their harvest. And she comes softly, uncovers his feet, and lays her down. It comes to pass in the middle of the night that the man was afraid. He turned over himself. He realized there was a woman lay at his feet, and he said, "Who art thou? Who art thou?" And she says, "I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art near kinsman." So a tradition. He could put a part of his robe over. She would uncover his feet, saying that I want you to redeem me, and he would accept. He said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than in the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not younger men, whether poor or rich." He's saying, you are showing incredible kindness. You've already completely left your life for Naomi. You've completely left your life to follow after this God that you've come to trust, the God of Israel. And now, you're a young woman. You're certainly a virtuous woman. You could marry a man your own age, and he could take care of you. But instead, you're choosing an older man because you know you want to make sure that not just you're cared for, but Naomi is cared for as well. So you're choosing a kinsman that's going to redeem the whole ball of wax. And he is amazed that she is willing to do that. That's what he's saying here when he says, you're showing more kindness, that you didn't go after a younger man. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do, verse 11, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city of my people doth know you are a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am a near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman part. But if he will not, if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until the morning. And she lay down on his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know one another, and he said, let it be not known that a woman came here on the floor. Also, he said, bring the veil that you have upon me, and he gives her 6 measures of barley, a couple of weeks' worth of food, and sends her on her way back to Naomi. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? We could talk about that statement. And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley gave me, for he said, don't go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. And then she said, sit still, my daughter, until we know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be at rest until he has finished everything this day. This is an exciting night. Basically, Ruth has proposed marriage to Boaz. That's in effect what has occurred. You have witnessed a proposal. There are 2 Old Testament laws kind of mixed together here. There's a law of the kinsman redeemer, which involves land. Leviticus 25, 23 to 34. You can read that on your own. And then this law governing marriage, Deuteronomy 25, 5 to 10. They both seem to be in play here partially in this story. The first is where a land may be mortgaged or sold that could be redeemed back by a relative. That ensured that this land that was divided by Joshua would stay in the family of the Israelite in that line forever. If a relative could afford it, they could pay to redeem it back at any time. It could have been mortgaged, you know, if there were financial trouble. If no relative could afford it, then in the year of Jubilee, which is every 50th year, all debts are automatically canceled, including land that was mortgaged and sold, and it goes back to the original tribe. So that was God's way of ensuring that land stays in the family forever. So the land, redeeming of a kinsman for the land is in play here for sure, because Elimelech and Naomi had a piece of land. The second was if a woman's husband would die, then, and she had no children, then the man's brother would take her as his wife, have children with her, so that his family line would continue. That's in play, as we'll see, because he's looking at not just redeeming back the land, but he's also going to redeem Ruth as his wife. So they're both sort of a mixture of those 2 things here. If you think about the situation, Elimelech has land, Naomi has already children. He dies, that land must maybe in part passed to Mahlon, because Ruth is involved in this inheritance. Mahlon dies. Chilion, the brother, should have married her, but he's dead too. So now there's these two women. They're all the brothers are dead. So Boaz is about really taking on the entire thing. He's going to take care of the whole thing. He's going to redeem the land. He's going to redeem those women. He's going to take care of them, provide for them. Major sacrifice. That's the kind of man Boaz is here. That's the kind of man our God is, right? Jesus is Boaz is a picture of Christ, how he loves and redeems his church in a way. And Ruth is a picture of the church, the needy who needs to be redeemed. It's really a beautiful story. So we have this mixture here. Boaz is a just man, verse 10 and 11. He's a mighty man of wealth. He's amazed at the character of Ruth. He says she's a virtuous woman. He grants her the petition to redeem the land and to marry her. He accepted. So he accepted that he would marry her. And then we get to chapter 4, the transaction. So how does this all work out? Boaz goes to the gate in the city, which is where all legal matters get handled. Sits down there and he's looking for this nearer kinsman, because Boaz is not the nearest kinsman. There's one nearer than he. He sits down and verse 1, the kinsman whom Boaz spake comes by, unto whom he says, ho, such an one, turn aside. That's, yo, hey, come here, right? Come over here. That's what he said. Yo, ho, such an one, turn aside. It's easier to say, hey, come over here for a minute. So he says, come over here and sit down. And he did. He turned and he said, came over and he sat down. Then he took 10 of the elders and asked them to sit down, because this is going to be a legal transaction. And he says to the kinsman, verse 3, Naomi, that has come again out of the land of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which is our brother Elimelech's. I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me, that I may know. For there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then Boaz says, in the day you buy the field from Naomi, you must also buy it of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up a name of the dead for his inheritance. At that point, the kinsman says, wait a minute. I don't mind the land, but I don't want this Moabite woman. I don't want the responsibility of creating an inheritance and it messing up. I don't want it to mar my inheritance. I don't want it to mess up my future. So he says in verse 6, I cannot redeem it myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. I don't want to mess up what I got going here. You redeem it, he says. I cannot redeem it. Which is, I think, exactly what Boaz wanted to hear, and it certainly is what God wanted to hear, because it's his plan. So verse 7, we see the manner of how these arrangements take place. The man would take off his shoe, and that would signify, I'm losing, I know I have the right, I'm giving it away. And that's what he does. Therefore the kinsman said to Boaz, buy it for thee. So he took off his shoe, verse 8. Number 9, Boaz says to the elders and all the people, the witnesses, your witnesses this day, that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of this place. Ye are all witnesses this day. And the people that were there rejoiced with them, and they said, we're witnesses. The Lord make the woman that has come into thine house like Rachel and Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed of the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So Boaz, verse 13, took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel, and he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better than 7 sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, laid it in her bosom, became nurse to it. And they called the name of that child Obed. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. And then you see the genealogy there. The transaction here goes the way I believe Boaz intended it to go, like I said, and it certainly went the way God wanted it to go. Boaz had himself a wife. Naomi had herself the security that she needed and a descendant to carry on Elimelech's family line. It's interesting to note here that the nearer kinsman, who was worried about marring his inheritance, who is he? We never hear from him again. In fact, you don't even know his name. But Boaz, who was not worried about himself, not thinking about himself, took a risk with the Moabite in faith, and he is the great-grandfather to King David and in the line of Christ. And his name is preserved forever in Scripture. I would say that Boaz, he was the one with the right heart in this situation, wouldn't you say? He's the one that's blessed for that. We look at this genealogy real quickly. Verse 18, these are the generations of Perez. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz. And Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. And Jesse begot David. Go over to Matthew 1. And we'll end right there. It's another look at this genealogy. A little bit different. Matthew 1:1. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob. Jacob begot Judas and his brethren. And Judas begot Perez and Zerah of Tamar. And Perez begot Esrom. Esrom begot Aram. Aram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. Nahshon begot Salmon. And Salmon begot Boaz of Rahab. And Boaz begot Obed of Ruth. And Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David the king. And David the king begot Solomon of her that had been the wife of Urias, which of course is Bathsheba. The genealogy is pretty impressive. In just verses 5 and 6 alone, just look at 5 and 6, what you see there is a harlot, a Moabite, and the product of an adulterous affair. Some people say, I wonder if God can use me. Two verses in Scripture, and you see a harlot, a Moabite, and a product of an adulterous affair. I think God can use you. You know, I think God can use us. Truth be known, if it's not in Scripture, all the rest of them are sinners too. God uses sinners. God is amazing to save, and He can use anyone. You see, Boaz was the son of a harlot. So when you look at Rahab was the harlot that helped Joshua's spies when they cleaned out that city. Rahab believed God. She's in Hebrews 11 Hall of Fame, by the way. She has Boaz. Boaz then takes a Moabite. And has Obed, and then of course King David has Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, with Bathsheba, a product of an adulterous affair, all of which lead to the line of Christ. Not to say that we should live that way, but we're sinners, and God can use sinners, and God can use you. You see, we are Ruth. We are Ruth. We are the outcast, the one who needs a redeemer. And we are Naomi. As Christians, we get in trouble. Our faith can struggle. We are Naomi. We need to be restored from time to time. We're Naomi. And we also can be a Boaz, but we are certainly a Ruth, and we are certainly Naomi. We're real people with real struggles. The difference is the faith in God. See, those who act on their faith in God, God uses. They just acted on the faith that they had, and God uses them to accomplish His plan. So He can use you, and I believe He wants to use you. So be usable like Ruth, be usable like Boaz, be usable like Rahab. That would be the way that God would use you. Be usable. Just use the faith that you have and put it into practice.